This is Margie Conway from the Creative Hearts Studios, and this is the Connecting Hearts Network program. Today is October the 10th. I usually don't date our episodes, but I'm doing it for a main purpose today. October the 10th is Mental Health Awareness Day worldwide. This is the 75th anniversary of the World Federation of World Health, who helped decide that there's a worldwide crisis that's ongoing and growing in mental health issues that need to be addressed. October the 10th is also my mother's birthday. She has been gone for the last 5 years, and I am sure she is celebrating up in heaven. But I decided today and at the last minute that this episode was going to be dedicated to her and bring awareness to mental health. And to do that, I am going to share her story. Some people might not like that, but it's very important that I do because I know that it can help many others. When my mom was 2, she was diagnosed with meningitis. Meningitis was in pandemic back then. They were having all kinds of troubles with it. Children were dying right and left, and my mom was the first child in Atlanta, Georgia to survive. I have a newspaper article with her little picture standing in her crib showing that. But because she had meningitis, she temporarily went blind, and she had to learn to walk all over again. And I was told that the doctors told her parents that her nerves would always be bad. And she did always have very bad nerves. I'm not too sure how it was as a child, but I know she had one sister who was 10 years older than her that left home as soon as possible. And then she was the oldest. My mom was the oldest of 4. I was told quite often she would do things and the rest of them would get in trouble because Granddaddy and Grandma would not get on to Gail because Gail had bad nerves and it wasn't her fault. And I'm sure that's true because I witnessed that many times in my life. Not that it wasn't her fault, but that she had very bad nerves and didn't know how to cope and have healthy relational patterns to anybody. She was, I'm told by her, molested by a family member when she was a teenager who was drinking too much. Other than that, I know she ran away from home with her best friend named Margie, which is the way that I got my name, and it scared her so bad because they hid in a laundromat overnight and people broke into the laundromat while they were there. She went back home and didn't leave too far from there until she met my dad. The story about how she met my dad is interesting because she was dating Bill, and Bill was her guardian angel, although she did not know that. Now, in this instance, her and Bill were dating, and he had a friend who was in town, so he brought that friend over to date my mom's younger sister, and that man was my dad. They went on a double date. My aunt did not like my dad. He was not her type, and Mom did like him. I guess apparently tall, blonde, blue-eyed people with a little sense of danger to them was what was appealing to her. She went out, her and Brenda traded Bill and Daddy for a pack of cigarettes. So Mama gave Brenda cigarettes and Bill to get Daddy, and Mama started dating Daddy. I never talked to Bill about that and how it affected him, and yes, he does come back into our life after a while, and I will bring that up in a little bit. But my mom fell for my dad and fell hard, and by that time she was about 18. And apparently, I was his birthday present, and by the time she was 19, I was born. They got married while he was already incarcerated, and back in the 60s, I guess they would let a young lady marry an incarcerated man so the baby wouldn't be illegitimate. I'm not too sure about those details, but I don't think that was one of the brightest things she ever did. Because once she married him, that set her in a, I could say 20-year battle, but, well, it was a 20-year battle. They were married over 20 years. He was extremely abusive. He had drug and alcohol addictions, and he I would tell you for years, and I kind of still believe that, that maybe he was one of Satan's demons sent to cause wrath on the earth. I've tried many times to find something redeeming in him, and I have not been able to do so. But this story is not about him. This is about my mom. She went through horrible abuse through him. And some of my earliest memories involve her being abused. And that's one point that we would always argue over, because she would always tell me I imagined it and that I lied and that she tripped or she fell or she's wearing sunglasses because she ran into the doorway or something. But, you know, I saw what was happening and I knew a difference there. She stayed in that for a long time. She would leave, but when we would leave, she would go to my granddad's. And my granddad was also an alcoholic, and he was abusive to my grandmother, but he doted on my mom, and he would hide us out somewhere, in all kinds of places, and mom would get afraid of where we were, or she would get missing daddy, and we would go back. And that was a cycle that lasted until I was around 14. And I saw her in deep depression. I saw her with anxiety. Most of the time, I didn't see her much because she was running after daddy. Then when I was 14, there was a critical incident, and she wanted to go see him, so I went with her. And without going into that whole story, but I think it's on my bio if you want to hear it, I ended up in the hospital in a coma, and she ended up beaten up very badly and not healing very well. So she left daddy, but mostly she left daddy because he was on the run again, or he got locked up again. And while I was 14 and we were at home, we moved in with my aunt and my uncle, both of whom were her younger brother and sister, and they were not married. And while we were there, she became agoraphobic. She would not leave the house. She would not eat bread that anybody else had cooked. That's not true. She wouldn't eat food anybody else cooked beside herself because she thought we would all poison her. She wouldn't eat bread at all because it had holes in it. So that meant someone was tampering with it. I couldn't have friends come into the house. The few that did show up, it's weird. She allowed some of the oddest ones to come in when she wouldn't allow the safest ones to come in. But mental health works that way. It confuses your mind and you don't know what's good and what's bad. And so for years, we dealt with that. My aunt is the one thing that helped me get through and be able to go to high school and do the things that I did. So mom went through that for up until I was in my 20s. By then I was married and moved out, and she moved in with us. Even on my wedding night, she would have anxiety attacks, and we would call an ambulance and they would calm her down. And so anytime, you know, my wedding night, my wedding, the birth of my first child, she was in the room with me and she passed out on the floor, and they laid him on top of this 16-year-old girl and went to take care of the mama laying on the floor who had anxiety. And so that was a big cycle that we went through for a very long time. When I she did have several different boyfriends during those times because she was one of the women that did not want to be alone. And they were not healthy choices for her. So, but when I was in my 20s, she moved in with me and with the kids for a while. And the kids just thought she was the goofiest, funniest thing that they ever did see. And she was okay as long as we were doing what she wanted to do. But if I went to veto something or do something different, we had an anxiety attack and we would end up at the ER. So it became a pattern of let's not upset mama so that we don't end up in the ER. And that lasted for a little while, but then came Bill. Bill had, of course you heard, was one of her first high school sweethearts, and he loved her dearly, and he'd been in and out of the picture several times while I was young because him and his wife would come and play cards with my mom and my dad, and they would be in and out of the picture. But when he showed up this time, he had been gone for like 6 years, and no one had seen him. And when he came back to town, my dad sent my mom word, Bill's back. Maybe you should have dinner. So mom and Bill, he convinced her to go to dinner with her, and she felt safe with Bill. And he, within 3 weeks, they moved in together. He doted on her. He just loved her to pieces. And the things that aggravated me the most about her seemed to make him dote on her even more. And no, Bill was not a saint and didn't do things the way everything should be. He had an alcohol problem, but he didn't react violently with his problem. It made him sad and depressed when he drank. But with Mama, he would spoil her rotten. He gave her anything she wanted, and she let him. And then, while they lived in the high rise in Atlanta, and he would take her out shopping and all these things, it would go well. Where she had been agoraphobic and wouldn't leave the house, Bill would take her and he would go to the store and hold her hand while she went in to get what she wanted. And then he would leave her standing there in the aisle and move several paces away. And then he would move over to the next aisle, but peek around the corner to make sure she was okay. And he eased her back into life. He eased her into going out to eat food and that other people had cooked. He eased her back into going shopping. He eased her into just living again, because she really hadn't been before. And when I would ask Bill how could he put up with it, because boy, she would jump all over him for the slightest thing. He would say it was his pleasure. He loved her so much and had since the first day he had seen her. And that is something I didn't quite understand. But I know that he made her life and my life much more simple when he was in the picture. Matter of fact, by the time I met my current husband, we had gotten into a routine that I would call maybe once a week. And sometimes I would call her and my grandmother and put them on a three-way call and lay the phone down and let them go on at each other while I did whatever I was going to do. And they thought that I spent time talking with them and they were happy. And so was I, because I didn't have to put up with everything that went on. We would meet for holidays and we would meet for birthdays. And my husband did not understand that, because my husband, it was most definitely a mama's boy. And he was very close to his mom, even though she was in Texas and we were in Georgia. And so we started seeing my mom a little more often. And then Bill became sick. They lost the apartment they had because it went condo and they couldn't afford it. He had a major heart attack, which caused him to be downsized from a job. Life just wasn't as full of things as it was before, and mom was having to turn into a caregiver for Bill. And she started having her anxiety attacks again, and she started saying that the neighbors were fussing because she coughed through the walls and they would hear her and they would threaten to kill her when nobody was around. And she would call me in a panic every time he would leave to go to work, because the neighbors were, according to her, running a prostitution ring out of their apartment and they wanted to shut her up. So she had to get out of there before they killed her. And so we did go down and pick her up and bring her here. She stayed in our house with us for a year. And my husband, who could not understand why I had a limited relationship with her, began to learn why that was so. I don't know, to me, having her live with me for a year was like torture. But I could distance myself from it because I was used to doing that. And she did with my kids. She was the goofy grandma that taught them all the songs that I did not want them to learn and spoiled them by giving them all the sweet stuff and everything else. With my grandkids for a little while, she was able to spend with them. She made doll clothes with my granddaughter, like she did with me when I was young. And she was the goofy, funny grandma that they all just loved to death. And I'm very glad for her and for them that she had the relationship she did with my kids and with my grandkids. But she made my life hard. It felt to me like she blamed me for every choice that she made wrong in life. And that, of course, isn't fair, because I didn't have any say so in any of those choices. And she would take her anger and her mood swings out on me. She went to therapy for many years to many different therapists, and I'm convinced several of them probably needed a therapist for themselves with some of the answers they were giving her. One of them told her she was on a higher plane than everyone else, so it was hard for other people to understand her way of thinking. And I'm like thinking that therapist probably needed her license revoked. And one of them talked about her cat all the time and different things. So I don't know how she ended up with who she ended up with, but they didn't help her very much. When she was here with us, we have this standing rule in our house that you have to go to church, and she did. She went to church with us. I am convinced that several years before, when she lived with me, she had gone to church and that she was saved. But, she didn't go when she wasn't here with me. She would take Bible studies with Jehovah's Witness that would come to the house, but that's because they would come to the house and she didn't have to go out to meet anyone or do anything else. And so when she was with us, we went to church, and I would see her sitting on that pew, smiling and her eyes just shining. And I would walk around the corner and wonder who that person was, because it wasn't someone that I recognized very well. And, we would work at the church and do things. And one time she got tired and wanted to come home, and I didn't bring her home. So she turned around with me with a knife in her hand from cutting fruit, with an attitude that made everybody who was in that kitchen stop and catch their breath and turn around for a minute. So she made sure in one way or another that she got her way. She learned to cope by manipulating the circumstances. But I knew without a doubt that she had mental health issues that had not been addressed, and I am positive she had to have had PTSD from everything that she went through with my dad. There's no way she could have escaped that, but we didn't talk about it because we didn't talk about him. She would tell me I didn't see what I saw and experience what I experienced, that I was making it up to get attention. And the funny thing about that is I never told anybody until the last several couple of years. So how was I gaining attention from it? But she declined pretty rapidly in a lot of ways, and I would be riding in the car and she'd be having a discussion with somebody in the mirror. And sometimes those discussions would get a little alarming and make you wonder if you needed to pull into the local police station so you didn't get harmed. She would tell me about shadowy figures that walked around her house at night, and that she was afraid of them, and so she was praying for them to go away. I would try to get her to go to a counselor or go to a doctor, and she would always tell them nothing was wrong, that I was imagining it. Ricky found out for himself when I was ill, and he had to take her to the grocery store and carry her around, that, oh, she really did talk to figures in the mirrors, and she really did have extreme mood swings. And, to such a point that at one point when we were dealing with the adopted children, she was in the car with me, and by then she'd moved out into her own apartment. So her last 4 or 5 years down, 6 years down here, she had her own apartment. She had her own checking account. She paid her own bills. She had things going on, and that was the first time in her life that she was ever able to be self-sufficient. And yes, we helped her handle the mechanics of things, but she was still doing a good part of it for herself. She lived alone a good part of that time. For a while, Bill came and stayed with her, but his health declined to such a point that he ended up having to be at his son's, and she was alone. And so it's hard on the people that have to take care of them. And one day we were in the car, and she said, "You hate me, don't you? You think I'm just the worst mother in the whole entire world." And she said, "But at least I kept you and tried and didn't give you away." And I pulled over to the side of the road and put her out of my car and rode on down to the grocery store, just really fuming and having a fit. And then I calmed down and went back up the road and picked her up and told her we would never discuss that again, just like our discussions about my father. And we never did. So I tried to take care of her and honor her because she was my mom. And I did, through counseling, come to the understanding that if she wasn't who she was, I wouldn't be who I am. And I'm glad I am who I am, and I'm a strong woman the way I am. When she was in the hospital, after Bill passed, she had a nervous breakdown. She ended up in the hospital, and I had them assess her, and they did diagnose her with bipolar. So in addition to the extreme depression and things that she'd have, she was untreated bipolar for many years. And I'm sure with all of the figures that she talked to and the shadowy figures in her house and things that she had crossed over into schizophrenia, but I could never get her to go and do anything about that. One thing I do seem to have noticed seems common, and I would say with bipolar, but not really, because it is with me too. We take our medication and we feel better, so we think we're good and we don't need the medication again, so we'll put the medication down and we won't take it. And then we go down into our spiral of depression or arthritis pain or whatever it is that's bothering us that the medicine really was helping. And she was that way with the bipolar medication, but I had to tell her, if she needed my help, she had to take the medication because I could not deal with it anymore. And she did. I could tell when she didn't. And I followed through. If she wasn't, then I didn't come hang out. Through me going to several years of therapy after I had a nervous breakdown, I was able to, like I said, come to appreciate that I wouldn't be who I am if she wasn't who she was, and to appreciate some of the finer things with her, and to let go a lot of the resentment and things that had been caused in life. And I'm glad, because when she passed, I would have really had trouble if I hadn't let go of a lot of that. We were able to have some good days. I would pick her up on Sunday. We'd go to church. We'd go out to lunch. We'd come home, and she would either sit in the living room and sleep in the chair, or she would come in and we would craft in the craft room. That was always one place that we could share that we got along and we didn't have any dissension, was when we were crafting, because we were both pretty creative. Matter of fact, I have beautiful dream catchers that she's made and all kinds of things that she did with her beading and crocheting doilies and all that. She really used her creative aspects as her own therapy, and that's very smart. You know, that's something I condone and something we teach through the Creative Arts Studios. So Mom was mainly undiagnosed the majority of her life with some of the issues that she had. I do know from talking to other people in our family that on her side of the family, on her mother's side, there was a chemical imbalance that ran in the family, and several people had very horrific lives because of that chemical imbalance and it not being treated. And then a lot of people on both sides of my family who would have mental health issues would have depression or have anxiety. They would try to self-treat it themselves with alcohol or drugs. And we all know that alcohol and drugs and mental health issues do not work well together. Alcohol and drug use does not work well with anybody, even if they don't have mental health issues. So with myself, you know, on her story, I can go back and I can see the PTSD. I can see where she went through extreme domestic violence, and she suffered from that with depression and anxiety. And I can see where, when it's not treated, how that escalates and it really affects the people around you. With myself, I've had two major battles with depression, one much more serious than the other, but both of them incapacitating. And I went to therapy and went to the doctor about it, and I did go on antidepressants because it was needed. I didn't stay on them the rest of my life because I didn't have to. When I was able to get going and moving around again, I did come off them. But thank God I wasn't born with an addictive personality, so that wasn't, you know, ever a hard thing for me to do. The hard thing for me to do was to admit that I was having a problem in the first place and go get help for it. When I went to a therapist the first time, I was extremely depressed. I had just got divorced. I had had a very bad relationship with someone else. I wasn't able to take care of my kids for a while, and I had found out that anything majorly depressive with me or anxiety ridden or stuff seems to have to do if I can't be the mom that I feel like I need to be. And at that point I wasn't, and I just couldn't, you know, I let myself get in a bad situation because I was depressed and couldn't figure out how to handle things. And I went to a therapist, and she told me I had packed everything away in my life and hadn't dealt with it, so I was going to have a trouble one day. Within 3 weeks, I had her convinced I was just fine. You know, all that stuff I'd packed away was good. I was all right. I was going to be okay. The only reason I was depressed is because she had seen my husband prior, and he was an undiagnosed bipolar without medication. And as soon as they diagnosed him, he stopped coming. So me dealing with him, she was sure is what my problem was. And we went on, and I came out of that depression, and I went about life, and life seemed okay. I would somebody tell me they had anxiety attacks, and because of my experience with my mom and the way that I know that she manipulated them to get attention at times, I didn't believe they were real until I had one. I would tell you in a minute that, okay, they're just trying to get attention. And then I had my own, and I couldn't control my breathing, and I couldn't control my heart racing, and I couldn't control what was going on around me, and it was horrible. So now, yes, I very much believe in having anxiety issues. I knew that I had other family members who had it over my life, and sometimes I would say they were just being drama queens or drama kings and wanting attention. And now I know, you know, it is real. It really happens to your body, and there's not much you can do about it. What you can do is you can seek therapy. The second time I was in a big depression, you all know about, because that's what's led to this radio program and everything that else that I did. That depression got to the point that I was having suicidal thoughts, which scared me into seeking help. But before it scared me into seeking help, I would sit in my floor and cry, and it would be all I could do to breathe. And somebody'd say, "How are you doing?" And I would just say, "I can't breathe." And certain places I would go or certain people I would have to deal with, I would have an anxiety attack when I would hear their voice or hear that. But the one thing that I did do that was healthy for that is when I would have that anxiety attack, I would say, "Lord, your word tells me that I am your child, that I am to go into this place with gladness, that I am supposed to, you know, love one another," all these things. I would use God's word and tell him, "Please help me do that. Take this anxiety away so that I can do that." And yes, I was on medication, but it wasn't taking it away. And so the more that I turned to God and asked him to help me with it, the better it got. The better when I followed his word and talked to people that was I felt was causing my anxiety and confronted the situation, then the situation was out in the open and we were able to come to mutual understanding on things so that we could both move forward. And that was with several different people. And I did end up in therapy because, like I said, I had gotten to the point I was suicidal. They had tried to take me. My husband and my daughter tried so hard to take care of me, but nobody had an idea what to do. So that day I walked into Christian Families because I said, "I need a Christian therapist who knows who God is and can help me seek him through this." It was a change in my life for the better. And so I went through therapy for 18 months. I was also on antidepressants. I was so hungry and so searching for healing and for answers for things that I would enrolled in classes online and in life for life coaching and art therapy and pastoral counseling. Because, you know, up till 12, I wanted to be a psychiatrist, and I would even read psychology books because I was trying to understand the people around me. By the time I was 12, I realized I'd always be broke and never make a penny because I'd be treating my family all day, every day. So I let go of that dream. But at this point, I didn't feel it was necessary to go and become clinically licensed or any of that because I didn't honestly want to deal with people who were having those severe problems and be the one to have to diagnose them. I just want to be the one that helps them turn to God, that helps them realize, "I do have a problem. I can heal from it. This has contributed to it," whether it was domestic violence and abuse, because that does cause extreme PTSD. I know I've had it from things that happened in my life because my husband would tell me I'd have nightmares and beat him half to death, and I would never even remember anything had happened. I know that I was extremely cautious because of the things that I had went through for so long, and I had a lot of the PTSD signs. And going, like I said, I took medication. I went to Christian counseling. I learned to turn it over to God. and to let him deal with it. And that was really hard for me because I'm a very controlling person. I like to control all of it myself, but I learned to lean on him and let him take care of me. With my mom, when she passed, we were going through her stuff and we would find little slips of paper in her utensil drawer or her makeup drawer or her first aid kit or her journal sitting on the table or her crochet bag. Pretty much just about anywhere she would look, that would always say, "You're not alone. God is with you. Don't be afraid. God is with you." And, you know, it's necessary that we do those types of things because, yes, God is with us. There is clinical depression that requires medication to even those chemicals out in your brain. There is clinical conditions that needs to be treated, like bipolar and schizophrenia and anxiety even, that needs to be treated by licensed professionals. And if you're having any of those things, you need to go see a doctor to help you get through it. Because you cannot, no matter how well you think you're doing right now, you cannot take care of yourself. You cannot navigate these things yourself. You have to have somebody to help. And you're not by yourself. And I have found in leading this support group for domestic violence for her journey, you know, it's the group that we do for domestic violence and abuse survivors. And that group is wonderful. It is wonderful at acknowledging what we've been through, at being able to turn it over to God, at being able to deal with our anger and our anxiety and our emotions. Emotions that you have is just a cue that something somewhere is wrong in life. So you need to examine it and say, why do I feel afraid? Why do I feel anxious? Why do I feel these ways? And once you go back and you find the source of why you feel that way, you'll be able to cope with it in a healthy manner as time goes on. But I do tell you to seek a professional while you're doing it. With her journey, I am certified to lead it for these ladies, and I've taken lots of other certifications. Matter of fact, my recertification that's coming up next week is on mental health issues. It is an awesome group, and I would encourage you, if you have been through any domestic violence or abuse or are going through it now, that you seek us out and you come to one of our groups. Or you go to abuserecovery.org and you take one of their Zoom groups, which are nationwide, day and night, all around the clock, so that it is accessible to you. But you're not alone in that and other issues. And domestic violence isn't the only thing that causes mental health issues. You know, we have all of our soldiers that go off to war. They come back with mental health issues because of what they've been through keeping us free. But that's not all of it. I mean, the average daily person can have it, and you are not alone. That is one of the most important things that I found out when I was going through things, when I was trying to heal from being a birth mom and not seeing those kids forever, or trying to heal from the domestic violence or something, is you're not alone. And I did pull up statistics and things here because you know I like to do that. From the World Health Organization, or from NAMI, which is the National Health Association for the United States. It's millions of people are affected by mental illness each year across the country. Many people, like you, work, perform, create, complete, laugh, and love, and inspire every day, even though they have mental health issues. It is some of the statistics is it says 1 in 5 U.S. adults experience mental illness. 1 in 25 experience serious mental illness. 17% of youth 6 to 17 experience a mental health disorder. I have another sheet that has statistics for our youth in this, and it is very important, especially with all the things that go on in the world today, that you keep your eye on your youth, especially teenagers, because that suicide is their top manner of death of teenagers in the nation, and it all comes from depression, anxiety, and other mental health issues. In a 12-month prevalence of common mental health illnesses in the U.S., there's 1% of the people have schizophrenia. 4% has a dual diagnosis. I lost my screen. 1% has borderline personality disorder. And I will tell you, with my mom, when they asked if she was saved when she passed, I said at least one personality was, because she most definitely had more than one. 3% has bipolar disorder, 7% has depression, 1% has obsessive compulsive disorder, and 4% have post-traumatic stress disorder. 19% of U.S. Americans have anxiety disorders. Anxiety is the one thing that sent me to the hospital thinking I was having a heart attack. It causes your breathing to escalate. It causes your heart rate to escalate. Everything is out of control. There are breathing techniques that you can do to help get it under control. You have to learn how to do that, and you can from a licensed professional, so you need to check into that. 19% of all adults experience some type of mental illness in our nation. You know, I believe it's probably higher than that. And this breaks it down into all ages. It says 15% are Asian adults, 16% of Black adults, 17% of Hispanic or Latin adults, 20% of white adults, 22% of American Indian adults, 27% who are mixed or multiracial, and 37% of lesbian, gay, and bisexual adults have mental health issues. But you need to reach out, and I'm going to give you some resources that you can do and some ideas to help you improve your mental health as you go. Number one is talk with a health professional. Make sure that you have someone who's licensed. If somebody comes to me to talk about mental health issues, I will send them to someone I trust to lead them the right way, because I am not that licensed professional. I am just here to help point them to where they need help at. You can call the NAMI helpline, and that number is 1-800-950-NAMI-6264. You connect with friends and family, and you join a support group. Those are some of the main things that it tells you to do to come out and to receive help for mental health issues. Seclusion is not good. Isolation is not good. You need to be around other people. Sometimes you don't want to be. I understand that. Even without mental health issues, just because I'm an introvert, sometimes I'd rather be alone. But when we're alone, we tend to let our minds wander and our thoughts go on, and we have no one to help influence or see how we are doing for real. So social interaction is very important, even if it's just one close friend and doesn't have to be a whole bunch. When we get to our children and our teens, 1 in 5 children from the ages of 13 to 18 will have a serious mental health issue. 20% live with daily issues. 11% has mood disorders. 10% have behavior and conduct disorders. And 8% of the youth 12 to 18 have anxiety disorders. It says suicide is the second leading cause of death in youth from 15 to 24. And 90% of those who died by suicide had underlying mental health issues. You know, we accept so much stuff as normal in our loved ones that we need to pay closer attention to our friends. The impact says 50% of lifetime cases of mental illness begin by the time you're 14 and 75% by the time you're 24. The average delay between the onset of the symptoms and intervention is 8 to 10 years. We start seeing symptoms of these mood disorders or these behavior disorders or anxiety or depression, and it usually takes 8 to 10 years before we seek help on it. And by then, that's because we have sunk to such a point that we can't get out of it without help. So one thing for National or World Mental Health Awareness Day is seek help early. It's just like cancer. If you get cancer in stage 0 and stage 1, you can manage it and you can live a long, healthy life. If you seek help for mental health issues when they first onset, you can learn to manage it and have healthy relationships and a healthy lifestyle going, instead of coming from learning to cope negatively. Learning to cope healthy in the beginning is so much easier than learning to stop those negative coping mechanisms and change them to good ones. Approximately 50% of students ages 14 and older with mental health illness drop out of high school. And 70% of youth in state and local juvenile justice systems have mental illness. There's no reason for no one not to get help. I took a suicide prevention class, and the main thing that it taught was for the people to ask questions. If you know someone's going through something, Specifically ask them, how are you doing? Are you having depression and anxiety? Are you having thoughts of suicide? Ask them. It'd be better to ask them and have them get ill at you than it would be for them to have major issues or to commit suicide. Be aware of what people around you are going through. You know, we can say domestic violence and war heroes have PTSD, but, you know, other people have PTSD from things that they go through. Other people have severe anxiety that is crippling and depression. Ask them how they are doing and what you can do to help. A lot of times they're going to tell you fine, but if you know them well enough, you'll know that they're not. One of the things they taught us in the suicide prevention classes was if you know someone's going through something like a death in their family or some tragedy that has happened, specifically address that and say, how are you doing concerning this? Because if they have someone to listen and to validate their feelings, a lot of times they will share that with you. And just being able to share that with you is bringing it out into the light. And guys, you know, I strongly believe when we bring things out to the light, that is bringing them to God. And the darkness, all kinds of bad things can happen. But when we bring it to the light, we are able to deal with it because we have God on our side. Here are 9 positive mental health habits that you can try to maintain every week just to help you. 1 is connect to other people. I told you about that. Connecting to other people is extremely important, especially on the days you don't really want to. Having your values reinforced. I am most definitely a Christian, and I go to church. Usually every time the doors open, I connect with my church members, with my church family, and we watch after others. That is one of the best support systems that you can have, is to go to a local church. Talk about it. You know, if you don't have someone in your life to talk to, you can call the hotlines. There is a suicide hotline, a domestic violence hotline. There is a hotline that you can call and they can help you talk things out. And usually when you talk things out, you can work it out and find a solution. Learn positive coping skills, physical activity. First time that I was in depression, I walked. And when I was in Atlanta and it wasn't safe to walk so much in that area, I went to the gym in the apartment building and I walked on that treadmill. I kept that thing running because I needed to walk a lot. Stay present. Take good self-care. How to look after yourself. And I pulled up this really cute little sheet, but I can't read it, so I can't tell you those things on that cute little sheet. But I can tell you that you need to eat healthy. You need to have good nutrition. You need to, even if you don't feel like it, eat a few bites of things. I remember in one of my depressive states, my teenage daughter would bring me a bowl of pasta or a bowl of soup because when I sat on the computer, I wasn't thinking about it. So I would go ahead and eat the soup and eat the pasta. But if I sit down at a table and tried to eat it, I couldn't do it. So I have a dear friend I went to see not long ago that wasn't eating well. And when I sat at the table with him and talked to him about things that was going on, next thing he knew, he had cleaned his plate. Just about. So, you know, talk with other people, have healthy nutrition. Watch after your grooming. Take a shower even if you don't want to. Wash your hair even if you don't want to. You know, I have a friend who does accessories, and once we've interviewed her on this show one time, we're talking about, you know, when we feel down and depressed, we can put on that makeup and put on that jewelry and look in that mirror, and it will uplift our spirits a little bit. So sometimes, even if you're going to sit at home, try out a new hairstyle, something. Just do something positive about that. Have a fashion show for yourself of your clothes and find the good things, not the bad things. Because I know that women, when we look in the mirror, we will find all the bad stuff. So look for the good stuff. Reading healthy materials. If you are reading your Bible, 1, you are going to find help in it. I've read it through many times, but when I need specific help, I'll be led to a verse, and that verse will speak to me like it did none of the other times when I've read it through. Have a good reflection time where you can work out your problems. You can say, here's what happened today. Here's what was good. Here's what was bad. Tomorrow I'm going to try and do more of these good things. How can I turn these bad things around? To me, having your time with God is very important. Set aside a time, and it doesn't have to be morning. It can be afternoon. It can be any time that you need it. Set aside a time to have a talk with God, to pray and to read His Word and to listen to a good sermon online. I know all of our churches are online, and there's some very good ones out there that you can listen to. Turn on happy music. You know, Grey's Anatomy, they would dance it out. So they would be going through some kind of trauma or something, and Meredith would turn on that music, and the women in there would, and sometimes the men, would dance it out. And just being able to do something physical like that and listen to that uplifting music helps you feel better. If you or someone you love is having mental health issues, reach out to someone that can help you. If, like me, and your mother denies it and doesn't do it, or you have a husband who self-medicated it, and I'm making it clear it's not the one I have now, you need to bring that out into the light. You need to show that it does not work. You need to go to a professional. You need to have prescribed medication. If you have bipolar or some other condition and you have prescribed medication and you're taking it and you start feeling better about yourself, don't stop taking your medication. That is not something you can stop quickly, and that is not something you need to stop if you're feeling better, because that's part of what's helping you to feel better. The chemicals in your brain are being helped by that medication to either slow down or speed up or add more, whatever it is that you need. But most of all, if you're having any kind of problem, you can turn to Jesus, whether it's temporary depression or if it's something major, and He can help you. He can get you through it. He will never leave or forsake you. He tells us that many times. And it tells us He's overcome the world, so He can overcome anything that comes our way if we turn to Him and give it to Him. Sometimes that involves sending us to a doctor. So I am not for no way saying that licensed clinical professionals are not needed. They are most definitely needed. We have some good ones in this area. There's a Pathways Clinic that I know you can go to that is in our area, that is income-based. There's one in just about any place. If you seek help, you will find help. So I'm encouraging you not to hold it in, not to try to deal with it yourself, but to realize you're not alone, to realize that whatever's affecting you is affecting the loved ones around you. Ask for help. The people that love you will want to help you. And instead of thinking badly of you because you're having some type of mental health illness, they will be happy that you asked for help, because it's going to improve their life as well as your own. So this was just a little bit of sharing my mom's story on her birthday. You know, when she passed, the first thing I could think of is she finally found some peace in her life. You know, because I believe she's in heaven with God for eternity, and I know that there's peace there, because there's not depression, anxiety, and tears in heaven. And she has finally found the peace that she needed. I know up in heaven, I have the mom I always wanted. If your family members can't be exactly what you think they need to be to you, then you can learn to adapt, and you can learn to reach out and help them where they need some help. So on this World Health Mental Illness Day, be more aware of your friends and what they're going through, and be willing to ask the hard questions and help them find help if they need it, or to be there for them through whatever they may be going through that could be short term, because knowing you're not alone is one of the most important aspects of being able to deal with it. So I hope this helps somebody somewhere. I know you get tired of hearing me talk for quite so long, because I get tired of hearing me talk all the time. But I thank you for tuning in week after week to meet our guests, to talk about some important topics, and to have a little fun, because when we do so much serious stuff, we need to have some fun. If you are local, we did a Breast Cancer Appreciation Day where we decorated bras for some of the studio members that have gone through breast cancer, and we have them displayed at the Brossom exhibit at the LaGrange Museum, and it is all through the month of October they will be there. And you can go to the reception Friday night the 13th from 6 to 8, because I know I will be there. As far as our domestic violence awareness things, Holly and I have a few things coming up this month that we're going to let you know about soon. And we hope that we can do something to make your day a little bit more brighter. Thank you for listening.